Good morning. Well, here we are on the last morning. Who could have imagined it? No one could imagine this moment when we started a few days ago. Catherine says, the idea of this moment is different from this actual moment. So, just let those memories slide right out, and maybe they won't be hooked again and again. We've been using Catherine's book to explore this practice of sitting and practice of sesshin. And we talked about the practice of yes, of saying yes. Saying yes to sitting down, saying yes, and maybe having the experience of openness, maybe the experience of not so tightly held to this self and all of the mechanisms that we use to protect it and make sure that it's always right in front of the line, in the front part of the line. When we say yes, we let go of that and feel a little more connected. We experience our interdependence, perhaps, more intimate with the moment right now, that timeless moment that's just right now. Yesterday was sort of a pragmatic day, hearing about lots of metaphors for meditation, such that, you know, when thoughts do arise in our quiet sitting, how to meet them, how to not hook them so that they keep repeating themselves and get planted like a little concrete little calcified tumor in our brain. How we can meet those thoughts that come up so randomly and get back to our breath so that those thoughts are free to, what did Catherine say? Just dissolve. They just dissolve. And maybe those are some of the reasons why we keep coming back to sitting, why many of us here keep signing up to do these sesshins for 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 days. Because that experience of fully engaged in our life, intimate with life, is reinforcing. We want to experience that again, even though it comes with getting up pretty early on a Sunday morning, following a schedule that's not usually our own schedule, developing kind of a few aches and pains, a little stiffness, certainly tiredness in the body. But the journey to that intimacy with our lives ends up being worth it. So we keep signing up. Some words that are used that Catherine might use and are, you know, that feeling of wholeness or oneness that people say, you know, that's a familiar feeling, or that's like coming home. And we want to cultivate that feeling of wholeness, when not only here on the cushion, but can the perfume of that wholeness, which is the reality of all things, can we lead our lives grounded in our wholeness rather than seeing such strong separations? Not only separations between people, but I don't like that person, or I really love that person. I mean, the extremes of separateness. We feel an ease or a release or a liberation when we abide in this wholeness. But, you know, what are we going to tell our friends about this weekend, about these 4 days? I'm retired now, but I worked in a big place, lots of people, and they all knew I practiced Buddhism. You know, there was, when I first started work, I had hair that I actually grew, and that I would shave off every once in a while for big events. So they knew I was pretty active here. Now, of course, there's hair. In Buddhism, we call it no hair, and not much of it grows even if I don't shave it. But I would just say, I'd take time off from work. Oh, I'm just going on one of my Buddhist retreats. And maybe when I would come back, they'd say, well, how was it? what do you say? What do you say? I mean, the head shaving was one thing that kind of, you know, said, oh, this is a little bit odd that here this guy in my office is shaving his head every once in a while for his religion. So, you know, I was already kind of a little off, but they liked me, so they wanted to maybe know a little bit more. I think sometimes they greet me with, oh, that just sounds so nice to go away and, you know, just sit and not have any responsibilities. And I'd say, yeah, that is nice. But this isn't the whole of it. I mean, you know, I don't think we'd come back if it was just relaxation. I mean, we might as well just, you know, sit in Lazy Boys and watch Downton Abbey. You know, if relaxation was really our deepest self. Deeply relaxed. I was deeply relaxed. So there's not much we can say about this other than it seems compelling. I've landed, you know, I want to land on something. Katagiri wrote the book that said, you've got to say something. On some level, you have to find a concept, and I've landed on, you know, I feel nurtured by by this practice. It's a food that this practice gives me, that nothing else gives me. And it seems to be the food that I need. I'm not going to say it's the food we all need, but I think, and I haven't really looked at a lot of spiritual traditions, but I think the people who kind of start marching, you know, like this morning, maybe on our break at after breakfast, we were in the park and people were going to church up there, you know, just down the street. And I knew that, gee, you know, all of us short-haired people are, you know, circumambulating the Zen Center with our coffee cups. And, so there's lots of us here on this small piece of property on the hill here that, I think we're going there to be nurtured in probably the same way. And it's food that we feel that we need. You know, Buddhism says that not everybody feels that they need that food or have the opportunity for that food. But Buddhism says, you know, but that's why we've got all these lifetimes. That at some point, somebody's, you know, will get the taste of that food. And I think a line from Catherine yesterday was this sitting gives us this deep taste of our lives. And it's not just this life, it's a deep taste of wisdom, deep taste of reality that we then start turning towards and finding. And whether we see the sign out in front that says Zen Center and say, I'd like to taste a little of that. I'd like to try a little of that. I hear that that's where you go for that deep taste, for that nourishment that I've got a little bit of. Or whether you see the sign just a block away that says Holy Cross Church, maybe I'll try the deep taste that's offered there. I think at some point, it's the nourishment that we all move towards and that we all need in this lifetime or another lifetime. So Katagiri, you know, said you've got to say something, and Catherine has a whole chapter called Meeting What We Can't Know, which I think both are true. And somebody in the office is going to want you to say something, and you're going to say to yourself, what do I say? I don't know it. Feel free to land on my word nurturing, but find, you know, if you have to say something, find a word that might express, you know, where the direction that this practice takes you. But, and of course, this is where I start getting into trouble, because there's no real words. And when we try to say words, it's always not it. And it's especially not it in people's, for some people, it's just sort of just the wrong word. You know, any word implies a whole cascade of associations. And so So this is where the whole community just needs to chant Om and that be the end of all lectures, or that be the end of all sesshins, because you know it gets to the wordless, and you know Catherine was great at words. Catherine was born in Berkeley. She had two immigrant parents. Her parents came from Greece, and they ran a Greek restaurant in Berkeley and a grocery store. And she went to UC Berkeley, and she was the editor in her last year of the Daily Cal. Is that what it's called? I mean, so words were her thing, I said we used cassettes to tape record lectures in those days, and she would put a transcription of those, they would be edited by her. She would transcribe them from the tape, and she would go over them with a fine-tooth comb. So they weren't exactly the words that she said, you know, from this seat or sitting at Jokoji. But she really wanted to be clear. So editing and choosing just the right word, having another chance at it when it went down on paper, she really reveled in. And so all of our newsletters are her exquisitely careful editing of her talks. And then this book took some of those talks, took like 30 of them, as a matter of fact, 30 some, and they weren't edited. They were, you know. Sometimes when we give talks, like now, we kind of veer off into another direction. So some of those veering offs were excluded. Some of us were here, some of you guys were here in March when this book came out, and Natalie Goldberg and Bill Anelli, who put together this book, came and talked about the process, and they said they kept Catherine's exact words, but sometimes they had to take out paragraphs that really, you know, were veering off from a theme, the theme that the talk gave. So Catherine was very good with words, but even her words start getting a little hazier, a little less exact, more pointing words than exact words. You know, Dogen, you know, wrote volumes. Dogen was very much into words and choosing words. And Dogen, as we saw yesterday, was very careful about telling you exactly where to put your right foot and then your left foot and your nose and your navel. You know, very careful about just exactly how to sit in this posture. And then he gets to the point of, you know, okay, once you're here, what do you do when the bell rings? He says, think not thinking. And, you know, what's that? And we have to decide for ourselves what that is. And we, you know, I sort of said yesterday what I thought that it might be, like making it a little more concrete. But so language like that starts coming up when we talk about why we sit. We have to choose our own metaphors that keep us going. That that become meaningful for us, not because they say it exactly and now we understand, but the metaphor that keeps us coming back to the cushion and putting our right foot just where Dogen says it should be and our navel just where Dogen says it should be. And trusting, cultivating trust for our body and mind, dropping body and mind, and sitting in concepts perhaps like wholeness or oneness or home or non-duality. The poem that we were chanting in the evening service, Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage Hut, Grass Roof Hut, talks about, you know, this flimsy little thing is finally built and then it gets covered by weeds. And weeds are, weeds are our karmic conditioning. Weeds are our karmic mind. I'll say that now. We sit with our karmic mind and we fall through those weeds by staying with our breath, by letting thoughts dissolve, and we sink into our life that's not really made up of weeds and people and huts, but this unconditioned mind, this mind that's sometimes called suchness or sometimes called emptiness, sometimes called Buddha nature. Let's give Catherine a try. In our Zazen, we are studying, what we are studying is the mind. She uses a capital M, mind. Not Catherine's mind, which she uses a small letter, which is maybe the weeds, not the weeds of Catherine, not Catherine's small case mind, but the big mind arising as Catherine. So, and when Catherine can hear and accept everything that's going on in small case mind, when Catherine can enter this sitting and look clearly at all the karma, all the weeds of her mind, she can hear and accept everything that's going on in everybody's mind. Nothing is outside the mind. In that mind, there is no pressure to become a better Catherine. It is to be without anxiety. It is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. As one of our Chinese ancestors said. So Catherine's experience of this sitting and dropping below the weeds or letting thoughts dissipate and settling on that and tasting the deep flavor of life. Her experience is that from there, all of Catherine arises. The weeds start growing right at that ground and become Catherine. And in Catherine's sitting, she discovered that these thoughts and feelings, likes and dislikes, the weeds of Catherine, were none other than that ground that we can touch and taste in our Zazen. And that maybe that ground isn't something special about Catherine, but that's the ground that all of us grow into our individual selves from. And Catherine is saying when we realize that, she then knows about everybody else. That, oh, you guys too have sprung up from this same ground. This mind that's now appearing as Catherine, that's now appearing as Anita, that's now appearing as Yarrow. I know that mind. I know you. I'm not so separate from you because we've come from the same ground. And maybe that's the wholeness that we feel, not separated from others, not separated from other things, other people, because it's all about common ground, if I can use another metaphor. I wanna taste that soil. I want the nutrients. Yarrow's nutrients were so good this session. They kept us going all 4 days, and yet the nutrients that we need come from that ground, that soil, the deep taste of our life that we discover every once in a while in our meditation, when we can really sink through the roots of those weeds into that deep, deep soil. She quotes Matsu. Matsu's realization, and this is me, of that deep ground, of that deep flavor. Matsu's realization, often quoted, is, "This very mind is Buddha." So that's you know, another step in this unexpressible practice. That ground has been called Buddha, Buddha nature. That's what Matsu said. This very mind is Buddha. And that brings forth, Catherine says, the mind of humility. When we realize that we all are Buddha, that we all share that ground, that we are all made of that ground. This is me going on. Catherine says, when we realize we are Buddha, we find everyone else is too. And naturally, generosity and kindness comes forth. When we can really cultivate the awareness of that ground that unifies all of us, because it's the source of all of us, any separation just drops away, and naturally we're intimate, and naturally we're whole, naturally we're kind, because we're not separate. We are just this mind and body of Buddha. And that's, I think, why we want to come back, you know, in the early morning and crawl up here with our stiff knees, because we feel that intimacy and kindness. We are that intimacy and kindness. And that's the nurturing that we need. Suzuki Roshi said, "When you just say yes, you forget all about yourself and you are refreshed into some new self. Before the new self becomes an old self, you should say another yes." Just say yes. And, you know, that's why we have the place open every day, because to remind us to say yes again and again. Yes, we're nothing but this ground of wholeness that is nurturing us, that's feeding us. And can I relate to everyone that I meet today as you too are nothing but this ground of wholeness? We are an energy field interacting with multiple other energy fields, and how we interact internally and externally determines the shape and possibilities of our world. We are also one interconnected planet without shared values. Buddhism does not give us a solid world to bump up against, but a living, flowing, interactive organism as our shared world. All of us, whoever we are an expression of the whole, the causes and conditions that brought our lives into being. This is true for our energy, but it is an expression of fear, dependency, resistance, joy, whatever. We are always bringing forth the whole of every moment. When a teacher and student meet face to face in the classroom, they meet in love. How does this happen? It may have something to do with the nature of the mind, probably our deep intention. It is probably an expression of our wholeness. If you are a teacher and receive the trust of a 6-year-old child, that may help you remember your own wholeness and also the child's. Yeah, our practice helps us remember our wholeness. And we need mindfulness bells like that throughout our lives, throughout our day, to remember wholeness. When we stumble over the roots of the weeds in our lives, maybe that's a mindfulness bell it too is growing from that ground of wholeness, fed by that deep flavor, the way all of us are, and relate out of that sense of deep, deep wholeness. What would make someone encountering you feel whole? When we are responding from wholeness, perhaps oneness or wholeness in the other person may respond. We sit this sesshin to diminish the claims of our partial selves and bring forth our mind of oneness. May the merit of our practice in sesshin these 4 days be directed towards remembering wholeness, remembering oneness. May we express our oneness in all of our activities, and may that expression bring forth oneness in others who might feel divided. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.